Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rabble Rousing, Rich Bergeron.
Yo, and this is the Tornado. I'm here. You guys want to say hi live on the air?
Hey. Hi.
I'm not letting you say hi. What's going on out there?
Hey, we got some boxing guests on tonight for the boxing ring, man.
What time? Nobody, listen, I'm standing here right now with this guy named Joey. He says, mixed martial arts is terrible. Nobody wants to watch it. Nobody wants to listen to it. And he goes, people, he says, boxing is where it is. Right, Joey?
Boxing sucks.
You know, this is Joey. I mean, I told him that a minute and a half ago he was going to be boxing. Yeah, that's the best he could come up with.
The guy speaks my language.
Rich, listen to me. Rich, I've been on the show for 30 years now almost. Remember I always talk about my one idiot friend and I never mention his name? That's him.
Okay. Boxing sucks. Well, they use the right word. I don't know if it sucks, but that is a good word. I like the word sucks.
Nice. Yeah, I know.
But Griffin, boxing, Yusuf Mack. It's a showdown here coming up soon. And, good old Matt Yanofsky over there at Knockout Publicity just up with both of these guys. Paul Otis, I let him know we're going to try to call him at 8:30. He's kind of missing one. Don't know if he's going or not. But we got Yusuf Mack for sure. So we're going
to
call him.
Oh, well, it's up to me. I mean, I'll talk to anybody. You know that.
Right. We got
I'm actually standing in the parking lot right now, so we're about to get back into my car.
All right. All right. Well, you do that.
Yeah, a group of us are out of dinner tonight. And then, like, about 45 minutes ago, they're like, did you have a show tonight? I'm like, yeah, I'm live on the air in 40 minutes. Yeah, answer the phone and talk.
Yeah, it's very easy. We got set up. We're going to have to actually move to a premium show in February.
A what show in February?
A premium show.
What the hell does that mean?
That means that we pay extra for the extra features.
We got to pay?
We got to pay a little, yeah. They're going to change their policy so that you can't have a primetime show if you have a free profile. So you got to pay.
But that sucks.
Yeah, I'll get a sponsor for it. I got time.
Oh, yeah, but it's still, that's annoying. I hate paying things.
Yeah, right? Everything should be free, but hey, they're looking for some way to get people to pay, so even though we signed up till 2015 for a free slot, now they're trying
yeah.
to get them.
I want to talk to my lawyer.
Right? I tried to say that I was going to file a class action suit and contact all the people that are pissed.
I want you to start a site. Whatever it is sucks. Blog Talk Radio, I don't know. Whatever. I want you to start a suck site on them.
Yeah, I could do that. I just got to find an overseas server. That's the only thing. So they can't sue me and get it taken down. That's the new thing I figured out.
Yeah, because paying is just unacceptable.
Yeah, I know. But hey, you know. Might be worth it. I
had to pay for shipping on, like, the Christmas stuff this year. I was at my old job. I was, you know, I worked in the mail room. I'd send everything for free. It was great.
Nice.
I'm a tornado.
Seeing as we're going to have a mostly boxing show starting at 8:30 when we try Otis Griffin, we're going to run down the UFC 125 card here again. Right down to the preliminaries. We got all the matchups. First of all, lightweight championship bout.
As soon as my mixed martial arts expert leaves, then we start running it down.
Okay.
He could have gave you the rundown. He's like the Rain Man of UFC.
Uh-oh. Well, anyway, I'm just going to do it quickly because we actually talked about it on the last show, most of these matchups, I think. But anyway, we got Frankie Edgar versus Gray Maynard. That's the main event. It's a lightweight championship bout. And the word is on the street now that Frankie Edgar, and if he wins, would be the Ultimate Fighter coach for next year. And I think that would be the best idea to do it that way because whoever wins, Gray Maynard or Frankie Edgar, they're both excellent fighters. And it highlights a guy coming from the WEC because he would be the other coach because he has to fight the winner of this matchup. And it would be... you know, it's New Year's Day. It'd be great to announce after this fight is over, boom, here's the coaches. You know, while you got the stage there already, that would be great for Dana White to do. And you'd have a couple of classy guys either way, Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar. You know, Gray is undefeated right now, 11-0, facing Frankie Edgar, who had a little bit of a tough climb up the UFC ladder, but lately he's just been an unbelievable boxer, number one, and just conditioned like you wouldn't believe. He's in the best condition of probably his life. And he's a great wrestler as well as Maynard. So it could come down to the boxing because if he can just sprawl and avoid a takedown, Edgar wins in the boxing game. Maynard has maybe the harder punch, but Edgar's just going to swarm him. He's just got the best boxing in all of MMA, I'd have to say, looking at his last couple fights. And he just basically tooled up BJ Penn for like 3 straight rounds the last time, or 5 straight rounds because it was for the championship. We also have Chris Lieben versus Brian Stann. And Chris Lieben is one of those guys who's been around forever and just fought everybody and still fighting. So he fights on like 3 weeks rest.
He was really making waves when he was in WEC. You know, he went undefeated in, like, his first 6 or so fights. He's knocking everybody out. Then he had that one loss, and then he came over to UFC, and I know he had one or two losses, start out there. And I haven't followed Brian much since he converted over to UFC, switched over to UFC. How has his career been going? I mean, I haven't talked to his wife in a while. since they moved, and I don't see you at any Eagles events anymore.
Well, he's 9-3, and both of them have a lot of power, I guess. But
Ryan's a tremendous puncher. I mean, when he won the WEC title, he knocked I can't remember the Rhino or whatever it is. He knocked him out with one punch. With one left hook, and boom, they you know, thanks for coming.
Leben is definitely the betting favorite. Yeah, I'm looking at these stats right now from bet.us, and he's the betting favorite, but Stan bet any given Sunday type of game, so who knows, you know?
Right. Well, that's the thing. That when you're a tremendous puncher, you always have a puncher's chance. The one thing I always said about, you know, Brian Stan, with his background, you know, being, you know, the Marine and the, you know, U.S. soldier fighting over in Iraq and Afghanistan, come on, Vinny. Come on, don't have a home. If you have such a great story, I said, I would vote him into boxing because what better angle to make money could you do with the all-American, you know, heavyweight fighter, you know, the American hero coming down to take down, like, all the foreigners, like the Klitschko's and Valuev and David Haye. You know, he's the best guy to defend, you know, the United States of America. Nobody better than, you know, the U.S. Marine soldier.
Yeah. Well, also on the card, a fight that might be the show. Brandon Vera, 11-5, fighting Thiago Silva, 14-2. Both of these guys have been around for a while, and they're excellent strikers. And this should be a really good fight to watch. I don't even know who to pick in this one. I kind of would say Thiago Silva just because he's been around a little bit longer. But Brandon Vera, I've seen him fight a lot of times, and he's just a real tall guy. He's got tremendous reach. Yeah, I think he could pull it out. Then we also have probably Nate Diaz's toughest test yet in a long while. He's fighting an undefeated guy, Dong Hyun Kim, 13-0-1. Nate is 13-5. And so far the betting odds are in favor of Kim.
Wow.
Then a really interesting fight. Clay Guida, who's always entertaining, even when he loses, 13-8. Fighting Takanori Gomi, who's 32-6 in MMA. And he's Guida is a favorite. Betting odds. Then we have the preliminary card. Marcus Davis, the Irish hand grenade, fighting Jeremy Little Heathen Stevens. Should be an interesting fight. Josh Crispy, who's actually from the New England area. I've seen him fight a bunch of times in the smaller leagues up here. He went into the WEC, did all right. He's fighting a guy named Dustin Poirier, who I never really heard of. Another thing about him, but I think he's got the betting odds in his favor for some reason. I like Crispy because I know who he is, and I think he's a pretty tough guy. It's a featherweight fight, so it's the WEC getting folded in right here. And then, of course, we have the Phil Baroni versus Brad Tavares fight. Phil Baroni, we had on the show a few weeks ago, and he was serious. It wasn't the old Phil Baroni, like, screw you, I'm doing my routine. He was like, I'm going on a run in 10 minutes, so we got to make this short.
Yeah, right.
But he was serious, you know, he's training hard, and, you know, he knows this is a one-shot deal if he doesn't do well, so the pressure's on for him. This is a big step up. I mean, he's been kind of fighting in the feeder leagues and Strikeforce for so long, and he's fought some legends here and there and done well and done badly in a couple occasions, but Brad Tavares is no joke, so he's going to really have to do some work to overcome that. The odds, anyway, I think are against him, but we'll see. He could be coming in there a new guy. He's as serious as he sounds. It's going to be a war. But that's at middleweight. Then we have a further preliminary card. Mike Brown from the WEC, who went to Norwich University and wrestled there, where I wrestled for a half a season until I fell off the roof. He's going against Diego Nunes at featherweight. And to round it out, we got Daniel Roberts versus Greg Soto and Jacob Volkman versus Antonio McKee. So that's the whole card coming up on Saturday. What do you got for boxing?
Well, there isn't really much going on in the fight field right now. You
because you figure, you know, it's a holiday weekend. I really don't know anything going on. I haven't had a chance to go on boxing for appointments.
Well, righty then. There's a big picture of Clutch Trisher from here of boxing. And I did read an article this week that's talking about Mike Tyson making a comeback.
Not as a fighter, I hope.
No. He's not even coming back to boxing. He's actually going to be working in the camp of Fabricio Verdun, an MMA fighter.
Oh.
Famous for beating Fedor Emelianenko in Strikeforce. So... Mike Tyson has been invited to work with his camp, and he's a big MMA fan. I've actually seen Tyson brought backstage by Dana White in one of Dana White's blogs, who does those video blogs all the time. And he brought Mike Tyson backstage to meet with all the MMA fighters. And there's actually a rumor going around. I don't know if it's true, but I think they were trying to get Trump to do MMA at one point in China. He couldn't fight over here. He was under suspension from boxing from all that. But it never came through. But Mike Tyson's going to be going into the MMA training. Possibly.
Tyson in his prime, I think, could have been very dangerous in the MMA octagon because he was so fast and he was so devastating with his punches. I mean, obviously, if he would have been taken off his feet, of course, you know, he'd be vulnerable. But that's the thing is, I mean, he was just so devastating, I should say, you know, with his hand, that he would want to try to even take him off his feet.
Right. Well, we do have Thomas Adamek fighting this weekend. Actually, tonight. He's fighting in the Czech Republic. He's fighting the Gael Veloso at light heavyweight.
I know he should beat
It's the other Thomas Adamek.
Like a week ago.
And this is the other Thomas Adamek. This is the
imposter.
He's 16-4. And he's fighting a guy who's 11-0, Miguel Veloso, for the vacant Czech light heavyweight title.
I don't think a guy named Miguel is Czech.
Well, that's just like...
That's false advertising.
It's like a guy who's Swedish fighting for the Feta Central Latino title. Ooh. Well, we got a fight on Saturday, New Year's Day, in Mexico between middleweights. Marcos Reyes, 18-1 with 16 knockouts, and Rito Ruvalcaba, who's 34-10 with 30 knockouts. And that's for the WBC FECOM box middleweight title. And here's an interesting fight at middleweight. Marco Antonio Rubio, 48-5 with 41 knockouts, one draw, fighting Wilson Santana, 11-0 with 7 knockouts. And then we also have Miguel Roman, 32-7, 24 knockouts, fighting Angel Antonio Priolo, 30-8 with 20 knockouts, the vacant WBC Latino featherweight title. And we got Otis Griffin trying to call in right now.
Wow.
I think he's ready for a call in text.
Okay.
There's no way I can, like, answer and add him immediately, unfortunately. I'd love to put him on the spot. He's like, probably trying to call just to get back to me. I'll be like, hey, you're live on the air. What else we got? Nothing until next Thursday, so that's your boxing schedule for the week. It's all going down in Mexico, Czech Republic. That's all you get. Well, let's try to add him early. Since we know he's trying to call me. Let's call him. Need some dialing music. All right. Now we can put him on the
screen.
Hey, Otis.
Hey.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing? Is this Fight News Unlimited?
This is Fight News Unlimited. You're live on the air.
Oh, hey, how you doing? How you doing, Boxing World of Fight News Unlimited? It's a pleasure you guys having me on.
Hey, it's great we got in touch with you. We got our boxing rain man on the line, too, here. Tony the Tornado Pinnacle, we're calling.
Hey, not much, man. Just, you know, getting through the holidays and around I'm over at my mom's house. I got my aunt from Alabama and everything, so I'm enjoying it.
All right. Do you have some time, though, to talk to us tonight?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, you got this opponent here, Yusuf Mack, coming up, right? When's that show coming up?
It's January the 7th out in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Awesome. So what do you think about this guy?
I think the world of Yusuf. We spent a lot of time together up at Lake Arrowhead, up in the Big Bear area, down here training for about a year and a half, 2 years. We actually, at one point in time, shared the same trainer. The UK's John Tandy came over to train us both down at Lake Arrowhead. So, you know, I think the world of him.
Well, it helps you have respect for somebody. You guys actually have pretty comparable records, too. You've had a few more fights than he has, but, both over 20 wins. And who would you say has been your toughest fight so far?
Definitely my toughest fight, not
strategic wise. I have a strategic toughest fights, and I have, of course, just more brutal toughest fights. And my most brutal fight has been with Byron Mitchell. I mean, this guy, I joke with people and I say, the first time he hit me, you know, it's amazing how fast the human mind can think, because the first thing I said to myself as my conscience is talking to me, I said, man, I said, there's no way that this guy's hands are this hard. Somebody must have threw a brick from outside the ring.
Sometimes I joke when guys can take real good punches. I say, it looks like he trained by having somebody throw cinder blocks at his head.
Well, his hands felt like cinder blocks, that's for sure. And you know, he's one of the hardest punchers, pound for pound, that there ever was. You know, you guys might have seen his brawl with Calzaghe. And he definitely came to do the same with me. But, you know, luckily I used a little bit of the science to avoid him.
Yeah, he scored a knockdown on Calzaghe, didn't he, with the right hand?
Oh, yeah, he was the first guy to ever put Calzaghe in the ground.
Yeah, and only a handful of guys have done it. So when you can put yourself in there with guys like Bernard Hopkins and Roy Jones, I mean, that already says something right there.
Yeah.
And I remember watching you from the start on The Next Great Champ. What was it like being in the thing with Oscar De La Hoya? I mean, obviously he's a legend in the sport. And, I mean, just tell us a little bit about that, too.
Oh, man, you know, not only with Oscar, but with all the guys from the show, Lou Duva, Tommy Brooks, Oscar, and all the other guys they had on, like Larry Holmes and Ken Norton Sr. and Joe Frazier. And, you know, even a younger pro at the time that ended up being in my division, Sean George, you know, all those guys.
Yeah.
It was just like being around an encyclopedia of boxing 24/7 and I was a bit of a raw talent. I came over, you know, actually played football in the NFL, like floated around a couple of NFL camps, like the Baltimore Ravens, the Browns, and the 49ers. And you know, for those guys, you know, to put me on the fast track of learning, you know, it was like no other, you know. I mean, to actually sit there and have Oscar De La Hoya explain to you how to throw a hook, which he was known for and very famous for. You know, you can't buy that kind of knowledge. And then, you know, to have Larry Holmes come in and tell you how to throw the whip jab, you know, or have Lou Duva tell you how to cut weight for a fight, you know, it was just like a dream that I never woke up from.
That last statement cracking up was just, I mean, Lou Duva talking about cutting weight, because, you know, Lou always sitting there. I remember when he was with Evander Holyfield training him, and Evander was like, yeah, before a fight, we're in training camp. And Lou's out there with big bowls of pasta. And he goes, hey, I was lucky I was bulking up to heavyweight.
Yeah, Lou, he's a very funny guy, man. He just makes it, like, I used to be walking around there trying to mug everybody. And then he'd be like, hey, Otis, what's up with all that red you got on today? You like a big bottle of ketchup, you know. You got to laugh, you know. And I love that guy to death, man. And it was an honor. Actually, I was there for his, when I won the USBA title. It was on the night of his birthday there in New York. So and the fight was in honor of him. So I you know, it was just it was great to be a part of that. And there and that night, that was a treat in itself, because I had the 76 Olympic team. The 84 Olympic team was there with Parnell Whitaker and. Holyfield and all those guys were there with Mark Breland also. So that was a treat in itself.
Yeah, and Lou and George Patton really hit a home run. Actually, granted, they managed a lot of those guys from the 84 team, which said Breland, Holyfield, Whitaker. Meldrick Taylor was a personal favorite of mine, being a guy from Philadelphia. More than a few years now. My dad took me on my first real fight card in 92 down Atlantic City to see Michael Moore and Burt Cooper. It was the fight of the year. And we were up in the cheap seats. They used to have like this overhead like seating, like studio seating. And Lou was up there being interviewed. It was a week after terrible Terry Norris had knocked out Meldrick Taylor in a catchweight fight. And I was about 15. There was some guys there, maybe about 18 or so, a few years older than me. And we're all trying to yell up to Lou, like, Lou, why'd you let Meldrick fight Terry Norris?
He got beat. Why'd you let him do it, Lou? And Lou was pretending like he couldn't hear us. Well, Rick had the honor of interviewing Lou about a year and a half ago. First question, I said, Lou, I've been waiting since 1992 to ask you this. He said, just Mel Jacala fight Terry Norris and get beat like that. I'm like, you wouldn't answer me in Atlantic City in 1992. I'm like, I want my answer now. And he just laughed it off. What a great guy. What a sense of humor.
Yeah, he has tons of stories, man. I particularly like the one where he talked about how he got into boxing. He said it was like in the, you know, like in the 50s or something. He come down to the gym, and he was, I guess, an adolescent or something, and he wanted to be a boxer. He said he jumped in there, he got beat up, and the owner of the gym said, man, get out of here, you're not a boxer. And he said, hey, well, let me clean up the place and learn a few things. And so he cleaned up the place, and before long he was holding mitts for guys, and you know, that was good. That was his part of the fight game. He said that, you know, there's tons of stuff you can do in the fight game, which I don't think that a lot of people realize, is that you can be a trainer, you can be a cut man, you know, you can be a referee, you can be a manager, a promoter, you know, and those are things that you know, lost arts that the kids have forgotten about the sport, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It kind of reminds me of the Rocky movies, when Mickey was always telling Rocky to go get the mop bucket.
Yeah, I like you're carrying your time.
Wasn't that the best line ever, when he was like, man, I like you better when you're carrying spit buckets around?
I'll tell you, Eric, you'll get a kick out of this. I train people in my spare time now. It just depends on work and all. It's hard for me because I used to live right outside of, or I used to live almost on the borders of Philadelphia. I trained down at the gym in South Philly with guys that have gone to world title fights and guys that have fought on pay-per-view, some really good fighters. And I spent, like, the same thing that you're saying. I would just spend time down there just trying to learn. I mean, a lot of just brilliant guys down there. And you just learn from them. And then as I moved kind of further away from the city and I didn't get down there as much and I wasn't really fighting anymore, I would just have people over the house and I have a bag and some mitts and I would just show them some things. And I had this one girl I was training, and the problem with her is she took everything literal. If I said, you know, I want you to fight, you know, King Kong tonight, and you're going to give up about 6,000 pounds, she would believe me, but that's not fair. So the one night, I'm imploring her on the use of the jab. And I said, but I feel better using my right arm. I said, you're going to use your left jab, and you're going to learn how to use it and be effective. Yeah, but I like my right arm better. I said, you use it, I'm going to chop it off. And she looked at me. And I said, I want you to jab that bag till it hurts. You're going to hit it 500 times without stopping. And she said, what? And I said, you use your right arm, I chop it off. I said, you're going to jab the bag till the bag says, I hurt, and I don't want you to hit me anymore. She goes, but it's a punching bag, you can't talk. I said, I guess we'll be here for a while now, won't we? But she didn't jab 500 times, obviously, but I was joking around with her, and she actually developed a very, very good jab. And she always joked around. She's like, yeah, I'm out with my boyfriend now, and he says something, and I hit him. And he's like, ow, that hurts. I'm like, what hand did you hit him with? She goes, I hit him with my left jab and then my left hook. I said, before you came to my gym, your left arm was useless.
Now, Lewis, I got to ask you this. Where'd you get your nickname, Triple OG, there?
Well, it is funny because, hopefully the whole world realizes that I'm a Christian, and I'm a real Christian, you know. I think that we are to go out and plant seeds for the Lord in our daily work, and that's what I wanted to do once I was on the world stage of boxing, especially with a reality show. I'm a third generation Griffin, you know, and my initials happen to be OG, so Triple OG represents that, as well as in the Christian religion we believe in the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, which is the Trinity. So if anything, it's Trinity OG, the Trinity of God, Triple OG.
Nice. It's got a lot of meaning.
But, you know, with the way that things work out today, everybody thought that I was just some troubled kid from...
original gangster.
You know, which is not the case. You know, me and Andre Ward were talking the other... because I do a radio show called Fight Fan Nation also.
Oh.
And we interviewed Andre Ward before his last fight. And I was telling him, I was like, you know, it's refreshing to hear somebody, you know, not talk about, like, hey, I came from, you know... robbing banks and da 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 da, you know. Me and him were talking about how, you know what, it's all right not to have a horror story, you know.
Yeah.
To come from a good family, a good name, you know, everybody has a story, but, you know, we don't always have to, you know, make light of that and honor that to make kids think they got to go out and do something bad before they can turn it into something good, you know. And I think Andre is definitely an exhibit of that.
Well, there's a lot of good stories of redemption, you know, people coming from that background and turning their lives around, of course, too, you know. Actually,
oh, yeah, definitely.
One of the guys that I still remember to this day, even though I didn't really do a radio interview with him, I did a written interview, was Rayco War Saunders, who had gone from, you know, literally shooting people on the streets to being a career boxer who represented himself and, you know, tried to get his kids into it, started coaching people and... did all his own sales and promotions and stuff like that. It was a great interview, and he really turned his life around. So, you know,
speaking of Rayco Saunders, that guy is really making a good run in the light heavyweight division here. You know, I think it took him he had a lot of losses at the beginning of his career because of, you know, just being thrown in the mix. But now, you know, if you look at his record, he's fought guys like a guy who I lost to, Marcus Oliveira, and a whole bunch of other, top prospects and held his own, you know, and actually won in a couple of them. And he's a guy that I definitely, if somebody, you know, presented him as a pushover fight, you know, you might get in trouble as a prospect because he might end up whipping.
Yeah. he was involved at the time that I interviewed with him in a lot of controversial decisions, and actually Evander Holyfield was sitting ringside at one of his fights where he had either a draw or a loss or something, and they said he won that fight, and the other guy got a medical suspension. But you know, it didn't go in his favor. It was like, come on, you know, give him a break. But, you know, it was like hometown cooking he was dealing with. He was representing himself, so when you're not on the side of the promoter, you know, you get screwed sometimes, but...
Well, I mean, a lot of times, when you get good fighters, and I'm going to take a perfect example of a guy like Emmanuel Augustus, who's a personal favorite of mine. You know, he would go out there and fight his ass off, but, you know, since he was always in the other guy's hometown, or a lot of times he would get turned off, you know, because of his style, that he was clowning. But it wasn't clowning, using that to lull the other guy to sleep. And, I mean, when you clown, it's like often that you're not doing anything or you're not, like, you know, boxing effectively. Here's what looks like clowning. It's using the create opening to punch the other guy in the mouth. And you just get situations like that where you get a guy that, you know, doesn't have a great record, but he's too good to be brought in as a setup, but he doesn't have the same value that he's worth the risk. You're going to get a lot of guys like that, and that's you know, what makes it tough. So one thing I do want to ask you, looking on BoxRec, looks like the winner of this week is... going
to
get a shot at the IBF light heavyweight title?
Yeah, the winner of this fight is going to become the number one contender in IBF, and we will fight Tavares Cloud probably somewhere between March or we should get the letter in March, so somewhere between April, I should say, and June, the fight should happen.
Cool.
Now, the one, and I'm just going to ask you if this concerns you at all, after they had that fight the other week where I personally thought Bernard Hopkins got the shaft in his fight with John Pascal in Pascal's hometown, Tavares Cloud came out and said, well, if you know, John Pascal's not going to give Bernard a rematch, I'll certainly fight him. Do you think that could possibly push back, you know, a title shot that, you know, you could earn with your with the win next week?
Well, you know, it could. I mean, but I'm not a... necessarily worried about that right now. The only thing I'm worried about is Yusuf Mack. But it, like you said, it could push back. I mean, politics happen, and you know, the world may want to see Tavares Clyde versus Hopkins or whatever. But, you know, either one way or the other, you know, I just let God do his work, and it's going to happen. You know, even if I have to sit back and wait an extra 3 months or something, you know, it's going to happen. And who knows, you know, maybe I end up fighting Bernard Hopkins for three times as much money just because it's Hopkins. So, you know, the Lord works things out in a serious way, you know.
How much fun would that be, you know? Bernard, I mean, I love the guy. I met him. I mean, I always tell people, oh, Bernard became a star, you know, when he knocked that Trinidad. And I'm like, no, he didn't. I remember, and I said, I'm lucky because I'm a Philadelphia guy. But I remember fighting four-rounders when I was growing up from the Blue Horizon when they would put him on the swing fight on ESPN or the swing fight on USA. And I always thought he was cool because he would come out, you know, with the two big bodybuilders holding the axes, and he'd come out with a hood on. I'm like, man, I'm like, I can't believe this guy's getting, you know, he's not getting more recognition. I'm like, this is a tremendous gimmick. And I think it was just, you know, for the longest time, he just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, managers, promoters, whoever. But he did it his way, and that's, you know, how he got where he got.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he comes out of French Sinatra. But, yeah, you know, a guy like me, I'm what you call a mimicker. Like, if you put, if you had somebody dance in front of me, you know, have them do a couple seconds of a dance, I could mimic it. And that's basically how I learned the sport of boxing, you know, on a fast track, is I would mimic guys like Hopkins and James Toney and even Larry Holmes, you know. I would take all the great stuff that they did, like, and I just put it in my bag of tricks. Well, so I've seen, like, all those old Hopkins fights, you know, even back from when he was a young guy and he was fighting Roy Jones and with his fight with Glenn Johnson even back in the day. And he was lethal as even before the Trinidad fight. He was lethal as a middleweight and as a 154 pounder. And then I had the chance of when he came in cahoots with Golden Boy, you know, me being a Golden Boy fighter at the time, a lot of times he'd be out on the road and he would be at all of my fights, you know, just to look over and foresee the card and everything. And I was amazed, like, when I stood next to him, that he was ever able to make 154 pounds. So I was like, man, what the hell did you do? Cut off a leg or something to make this weight? And he's like, man, you know, I just train year round. He's like, I always keep the water boiling. You know, I never, you know, even if it's in between fights, I'm always running like 3 miles just to stay in decent shape or to burn. He's like, I never let myself get over a certain amount of weight. And I kind of like learned a little bit from that too. But it's just amazing how dedicated the guy is to the sport, and that's why he still looks good at his age right now.
Yeah, he's say about Paul Williams. I don't know how he makes weight at welterweight. No, he's gone up a bit.
152 or 147. Yeah, no. Some guys are lucky to have great metabolism. But going back to Bernard, I met him for the first time back in 1999, and I stood next to him. I'm only about 5'8". I'm like a short and stockier guy. And obviously he's got, you know, 4 or 5 inches in height on me. And we sit next to each other. And if you would have looked at that photo and said, who's the heavier guy? You probably would have picked him, even though at the time I was about 95 and he was 160. But the thing that I really remember in my head was I went down to one of his fights. He was defending his title in Philadelphia against the guy, Murad Hakkar. The fight was a joke. The guy was a definitely not deserving of the number one ranking, and he beat him up pretty good. But Bernard was there, and, you know, obviously defending his 160-pound title, and this is his next fight was going to be against William Joppy. And Joppy was there, and I happened to, you know, meet William, and I was like, I cannot believe that these two guys are both 160 pounds. I mean, when you look at them size-wise and physicality-wise, how, like, Hopkins looked like he was, you know, 180, and Joppy looked like he was 150. And I knew that was going to be Hopkins' key to victory in that fight because, you know, just using his physical, he didn't have to box him as much and didn't have to use his defensive. He just, you know, had to use his physical strength. That's the one thing I enjoyed watching him, is because he's a smart fighter. You know, he knows how to adapt to a person's, you know, what they do.
Yeah, it's amazing how some fighters go through a certain parts of their career. Like, I remember, like, you know, talking about those old fights with, like, Robert Allen and Glenn Johnson. You know, he slowed down and started being a more of a cerebral fighter when he got to Trinidad and stuff. But before, he used to just come out like a hurricane and just run people over. The same with James Toney. But now those guys have so many fights under their belt, they just know every angle, and they just slow stuff down. It's almost like Neo in the Matrix. You know, they can just see stuff coming before it even gets there. And it's amazing, man. But that's what the science is all about.
Yeah, I've actually been very impressed with Glenn Johnson and, you know, having been in the Super Six and all that. And just at his age, I mean, just unbelievable. He's in great shape. He looks good. And he's actually the last guy that Yusuf Mack fought and knocked him out in the sixth round.
Yeah, and it's amazing that you bring that up. It's like, because I didn't realize, you know, I thought it when I, because I actually helped, I was in camp with Yusuf before he had that fight, and he was well prepared, but I don't think that he followed the game plan that John had, because one thing is that he got intoxicated with himself, as Teddy Atlas would say. he hit Glenn with like a 3 or 4 punch combination that ended with an uppercut, you know. And Yusuf had sweet hand speed, and it rocked Glenn, and then, like, the crowd started cheering, so, you know, Yusuf just went hog wild and started throwing all these shots, and in my head, I'm like, no, don't blow your wad, you know, because we told him before he went into the fight with the guy, look, there's only been one guy to knock this guy out, his name is Hopkins, and it ain't going to happen, you know, so you gotta box his ears off, you know, and hopefully you get him to, you know, chop him down, and if it happens late, you know, or maybe the ref stops it. But there was little stuff that Glenn was doing that's just amazing, man, with the angles and how he just kept touching him to the body. Like, you wouldn't even notice it. Like, I watched fights like 5-6 times over and over. And when I was watching that fight, especially preparing for Yusuf, it's just like Yusuf was throwing, like, you know, 4 punch combinations, and Glenn would just go, little touch to the hip, little touch to the sternum. And before too long, in about the 4th or 5th round, now Yusuf's legs aren't the same, you know, and he was able to bring that freight train right in and end it.
Right.
So, you know, man, those guys, man, I can imagine, you know, I got like over 30 fights now, and things are starting to slow down for me, and I'm able to see stuff. But, you know, with the kind of fights that those guys have had and at the level that they've had, man, I bet you, like I said, it's like Neo and Matrix. It's like, man, I seen that coming a mile away. Yeah.
Now, looking back at the record, I just noticed that the last 4 fights that you've had have been either 6 or 8 rounds, right? Except for one at 12. Is this one going to be a 10-rounder, 12-rounder? What's the story?
No, this is a world eliminator, so this is pretty much like a world title fight, and it's going to be 12 rounds, you know. The other reasons that I've had like such short fights or whatever is, you know, I'm not with Golden Boy anymore, so a lot of times I'm out there just you know, trying to walk into a fight. You know, I was trying to rebuild my career after going down to 168, which I should have never done because I almost killed myself literally. Dehydration. What's that?
Then you went up to 187 against Man.
Yeah. I went. Look, check this out. So I went down to 168 to fight Jesse Brinkley, which, you know, like I'm at 4% body fat when I get to 175. So that lets you know what I had to go through to make 168. Then I went up to cruiserweight and I weighed in at 187 for the fight, and the next day, for the unofficial IBF weigh-in, I weighed in at 187. My opponent weighed in at 200. His name is Inad Lucina, a very good cruiserweight from overseas in Germany. And the day of the weigh-in, he, you know, you can't weigh 10 pounds more. He was right on the dime at 210. But at night, I kid you not, I looked at him at the unofficial weigh-in with the IBF, and I said, oh, he's big, but he's not that big. I'll box his ears off. Then the night we got in the ring, I was like, man, hold up. Is this like a stunt double or something? this dude looks like he's 40 pounds more than me, man. And then I remember looking at Daryl Peoples, who's now the president of the IBF, and he says to me, J, just box, Otis.
I was in high school, and I was wrestling 171, but I only weighed about 155 on a good day. But
yeah.
The guy at 160 was the captain, so there's no way I was wrestling in his place. So the guy at 171 was a freshman, so they made me wrestle 171. And then we go against our arch rivals, and there's like a two-time state champion at 189. And the coach says to me before the match, we might have to bump you up to 189. So you're going to have to drink some water and, you know, gain some weight real quick before you get on the scale. So he had me drink like 2 gallons of water to get on the scale. And then it turns out they do bump me up. So they send me out there against the 189-pound state champ. And they go, don't get pinned. Just don't get pinned. Stay off your back. It was literally 30 seconds. The kid had me in a pretzel. Boom. Pinned. Said, screw that. It wasn't worth it. You know, I puked up all the water. I actually got to the place because I had fallen asleep. So my coach calls me up like an hour before the thing. And he's like, you got to get down here and make programs, you know. Let's get going. So from a dead sleep down there, just doing other stuff, and then he tells me you got to gain weight, get on the scale. Oh, it was probably my worst day ever in wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
First time I ever spent 189, though.
Yeah, you learn fast about the physics, right? Because I learned that night, you know, hey, it only takes 6 pounds of pressure to knock a man out. So if you give your opponent 20 pounds, like, come on, man, are you crazy? Like, my wife even told me after that fight, she's like, I know one thing, you love this family, because what the hell were you thinking flying over there to go fight that damn giant?
My claim to fame was back during my amateur days. I boxed, in the college circuit, and I'm the only guy, I'm pretty sure it still stands, the only guy in a matter of 3 months to fight in 5 different weight classes.
Wow.
Yeah. I had started off because I was normally around 180 pounds. I'd fight between like 175, 185. But that year, I had serious knee surgery, you know, during the semester breaks. And I just couldn't run with my normal, you know, training regimen. I couldn't run like I used to. I couldn't run hills. I was still recovering. It took like about a good 6 months for me to finally get back to where I was doing that, my cardiovascular. So instead of being down to my normal weight, being weighed around like 178, 180, I was heavier. I was around maybe 188. So they're like, hey, take this one fight at 190. So I fought at 190. I'd already fought the guy before, so it wasn't like, you know, a big deal. The next fight, I'm getting ready, and I'm back down to about maybe 184, 185. It was a week later, and they're like, listen, you think you can fight heavyweight this week? I'm like, heavyweight? I'm like, I'm getting down to my normal weight. I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy can jump in the sauna, sweat 3 pounds up, and be at 180. They're like, no, we need you to fight heavyweight. I'm like, okay, let me get some water, put some rocks in my pocket. So I fought heavyweight. I'm still friends with the guy. We actually, he lived like 5 minutes from me now. But we actually auditioned for the Rocky Balboa movie together back in 05. So I fought heavyweight. Then a week later, now I'm at 180. They're like, okay, we're going to give you a fight at 180. I'm like, thank God, I'm tired of fighting giants anymore. So I fight with, and then I had another fight. I was around 178. We fought in the 180-pound weight class. Regionals is coming up, and it's going to be the regional tournament's going to be on a Friday. That Monday, I'm in the gym under the assumption that I'm going to be fighting in the 180-pound weight class. And the coach is like, what'd you weigh out today? I said, 179. He said, that's great. You're right on schedule. I said, yeah, I know I'm on schedule. I feel great. The next day, he's like, what'd you weigh out today? I'm like, 179. He's like, do you think you can make it to 165? I'm like, by Friday? That's 3 days. And he goes, yeah, but we're most likely have a bye through the regionals to get your weight to nationals. I said, let's do it. I said, yeah, I can do that. And then it'll give me another 2 weeks to adjust to the weight so I can fight at the nationals at 165. I said, they got an undefeated 3-time champion at 165. The fight is going to be at the Naval Academy in his home gym. And I said, I would love to be the guy to break his undefeated record and break his chance at 4 straight national titles. I said, I'll do it. They're like, okay.
and get to 155, somebody gets in my weight class. And it was a guy that I'd already beaten before, but I didn't have the strength. My legs didn't have it. He scored a knockdown with 10 seconds to go in the third round and beat me by 1 point on the cards in a fight that I was obviously winning. International, they're like, we're putting you at 172. Like, the other guy was shot at 165, so... And he didn't even get it. He lost before he had a chance at the defending champ. So five weight classes, one semester.
That's impressive. that's almost like that reminds me of the story of Jersey Golovkin, who you guys probably know that he started off under another name, at about a little north of 150 pounds, and his record was upside down, so he changed his name to Jersey Joe Wildcott after Wildcott, New Jersey, and went all the way up to heavyweight. So that's like a story just like that.
Yeah, actually, Rocky Marciano, who beat him, always walked around at about 185 and fought between 185 and 189 at heavyweight all the time. So how good an athlete he was.
He carried a lot of his weight in his legs, though, which I think was more important than anything, because a lot of guys these days are top heavy, but you know his punching power, you know, probably came from his legs and his butt. And also probably helped him take a shot pretty good too.
Talk about a guy who ran a lot, man. There's a story in the book about him, Undefeated, one of my favorite books, where he was on his honeymoon and he woke his wife up because he was going out to work. all the time.
There was a trainer that they had brought into my camp about 10 years ago. And for me, being a short, stocky guy and a Philadelphia guy, you know, obviously being a Marciano fan, because being Italian, my family's Marciano fans, but my style was more reminiscent of a Joe Frazier, all left hook. You know, my right hand was, you know, not that great. And they brought this one very, very prominent Philadelphia trainer in to come work on helping me develop a right hand. And until then, I always thought that the Rocky Marciano story, that tying the rope between the feet that they did in Rocky Balboa, I always thought that was an old wives' tale until I got a rope tied between my feet and learned how to throw a right hand. I was 5 years in the business when I learned how to throw a right hand.
Yeah, it's funny that you should say that because, you know, like I said, I'm a late bloomer in this sport, and I think the best years of Otis Griffin are to come. And I'm just learning, you know, balance, you know, and that's one of the things we did was tie my feet together because I would step outside of my my range and kind of lunge in the punches and stuff, and now my feet are under me, and it's amazing how that makes you faster. And it makes you more pinpoint accurate in
your
power.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, if you're a big Rocky Marciano fan, you want to know this fight. One of the things I learned from, and I just hit the bag, I don't box amateur or anything like that right now, but when I watch Rocky's fights, the one thing that impressed me the most is how he would fight from a crouch so many times he would throw a punch from a crouch, and it was good defensively, too, because think about it. When you're trying to punch down at a guy, you can't land a good punch. So he was always fighting from low to the ground, and then he would just explode up with that right hand. And I used to observe the left hook of Mike Tyson and try to do that as much as possible. I was always hooking lefts and rights all the time, so much that I would always leave my body open, the body shots. And probably my best fight in college, I hit the kid with more hooks than jabs, but I developed a good jab by the time I got to Nationals, and that became my favorite punch of all. But then I started watching Rocky, and that right hand of his, it's all about the crouch. You're coming down, and it's kind of like the opposite of the Mike Tyson one, because Mike Tyson had the peekaboo style. That's what made his left hook work so well. But Rocky had it leaning back on his right foot and then popping up with the right hand. So that's something that I never forgot, watching all of his fights and getting into his history, and just the fact that he was 189, and, you know, between 185 and 189 and knocking heavyweights out. You know, there's something to that right hand, and that was obviously his favorite punch. But before we get you off the phone, Otis, I'd love to know, what's your greatest moment in the sport?
My greatest moment in the sport probably was beating Byron Mitchell. You know, a lot of people didn't realize it, but and I didn't want to go into it like a stargazing admirer of this guy. But me and Byron Mitchell are from the same hometown. You know, I fight out of Sacramento, California now, but I'm from a little backwoods town by the name of Troy, Alabama, where Troy State University is now Troy University. Byron Mitchell was from that town, Pike County, in that area, right? And for years, you know, he's a legend. He's like a folktale there. You know, a lot of great boxers have been born in Alabama, like Joe Frazier was born in Alabama and migrated up to South Carolina and then to Philadelphia. Joe Louis was from Alabama and migrated up north. Byron Mitchell was one of the guys that came from Alabama and kind of always represented Alabama. And you know, I was just in awe of him, like his knockout ratio, the way that he came in the fights like a gunslinger. It was either going to be him or you. And I watched him for a number of years, and then finally to win against him and take some of his best shots in doing it and give him to actually KO him. Man, that I'll never forget that night. You know, it was, and I know it was nothing but God protecting me, because I prayed Ephesians 6 over myself through that whole camp, and which is the full armor of the Holy Spirit, and it came to light, man, because that guy was throwing shots. If you guys ever get a chance to watch this film, that guy was throwing shots that could have knocked down a damn building. My trainer told me afterwards, he said, I didn't want to ask you during the fight, Sacramento team. He said, but when you got hit by some of those body shots, I was like, Jesus, are those hurting or am I just seeing things?
Yeah, it's always tough. Now, one thing we always ask every guest, or at least try to, what do you love most about this sport?
I love the fact that the sport represents life, and I like the purging of the body. You know, when you train for a fight and you get so in tune with your body and your spirit, like within the 12 to 8 weeks, I usually go 12 to 8 weeks before a fight, and I clean the body out. Then I begin to run and get my wind right. Then I begin to, you know, for some reason I start reading not only the word of the Bible, but just everything, right? And then I start watching film of old black and white era. And you get so in tune with yourself, it's almost like the world is at a standstill. And for those 8 to 12 weeks, like you forget about the rat race of the world and everything. Then the night of the fight, it's almost like, you know, you've already fought the fight before you got there. So then after you win, after you lose, even after you draw, whatever, you feel cleansed. And you feel like, hey, I gave it my best effort, and you know what? I crossed those ropes, and it was all on me. It wasn't the quarterback that threw the interception. It wasn't it wasn't Kobe shooting us out of the game. It was me, you know. And I think that the purging of the body is something that you can always look back on and just be, you know, just so proud of you of your accomplishments and everything that it took, because it was of you. You know, it's a little bit of a selfish sport, but it was of you. You know, there's always going to be somebody that has to get there. You got to have a great team, great advisors, like a trainer and stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, you had to cross those ropes, and I love it about this sport.
Awesome. That's probably the best answer to that question you've ever had. That's great. Now, is anybody you want to give a shout-out to, or any message you want to give to Yusuf Mack, who we're going to actually have on next?
I just Yusuf already knows, you know, that after this fight, you know, me and him are going to go party regardless of what happens. He's like a brother to me and everything. But you know, I say that and people say, well, man, are you guys really going to be fighting each other? But I tell you this about me and Yusuf, we are tremendous competitors. And even when we used to spar up at Arrowhead, we used to try to damn kill each other. And then after that, we would go down to the local cinema there and watch movies and whatever, or play video games on Xbox or whatever. So, you know, me and him are always going to be great friends.
But I just want to give a shout-out to John Tandy, a guy that sacrificed a lot to get me and Yusuf to the place that we are now for this world title shot. And he's a guy that left England, came out to New York to actually train Yusuf. Things fell apart. He had his family of his wife and his two kids with him, Brandon and a newborn named Tia. He bring them across the pond to New York. Things fell apart with the management and promoter that was supposed to be involved with Yusuf. He grabbed Yusuf, his family, moved out to California to a broken down gym at Lake Arrowhead, which is, you know, a couple of feet underneath Big Bear, 6,000 feet elevation, and built the gym there and started training fighters from there. And unfortunately, you know, he threw in the towel with the hardship of the economy and moved back to England and started another gym there. But I just have to thank him, and at the end of the day, he can look back and say he produced a world champion after this is over.
Awesome. Well, we are worldwide, so maybe he'll listen. But, yeah, that's great. We've enjoyed talking to you, and we definitely wish you luck in the fight, although it sounds like, you know, you're going to be prepared either way.
All right, definitely. I enjoyed it, you guys, man, and I look forward to listening to your show from here on out.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on tonight. We'll talk to you later. Right.
Happy New Year, you guys.
You too. All right, we're going to go right to Yusuf. I told him the latest we'll call him is 9:05, so we're a minute late. Works out perfect.
With a lot of guys that I know.
Yeah, he fought in Philadelphia. Oh. Yusuf.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear us?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. I'm on the line here with Tony the Tornado Pentacal.
How you doing, man?
Good. Well, we just got off the phone with your good buddy there, Otis Griffin.
Yeah.
He said he's gonna murder you in the ring.
I hope so. I hope so.
I'm just kidding. He had nothing but nice things to say about you. He says you guys.
Yeah, me too. That's my, you know, that's my homie. You know, but come fight time, we just got to do what we got to do. May the best man win. You know.
Right. Yeah. No, he was talking actually just a few minutes ago about how you guys used to spar, like you wanted to go all out, and then you right after it, you know, you'd go hang out and play video games. So what do you think about this fight coming up?
I think it's a good another good opportunity for me. You know, Otis is good, but he's not. You know, he's not on my level. So you know, I don't think he's on my. He's a good fighter and all, but I don't think he's on my level.
All right.
I think I've been there with a better competition.
Yeah, I was actually just looking at the last few fights either both of you have had, and it seems like you've been in more of the 10- and 12-round fights.
Yeah.
Recently, at least.
Also, I'm looking at your record. I've seen the fight because I'm a Philadelphia guy myself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, some of the guys you've been in there with, you know, I know you had to win up the Armory the other year, Omar Pittman, who's a, you know, he's like a Philadelphia guy that's been around as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
He's a tough dude. Why do you got to win over him? Obviously, it would be a big win on ESPN versus Chris Henry. I remember watching that.
Yeah.
I still couldn't even went to a split decision because, I mean, I had you winning eight of the rounds easily.
Yeah, they gave him three rounds. I was like, I said, I didn't see what grounds that Chris Henry three rounds.
I remember when it was going around to the eighth or ninth round, and Teddy Atlas and Bob Papa saying, I got this fight a sweep right now, you know. So it was a little closer than a second. I'm trying to dig back into my memories here. In Philadelphia, did you train at James Shores, or which gym did you train at?
Yeah, I'm back there now.
Yeah, you were there with the guys like Jedi and
Yeah, I'm back with my own. My trainer is starting me off.
Awesome.
Yeah, cause I remember seeing you down there a couple of times, you know. And
yeah.
I remember Jedi talking about you because he and I are pretty good friends. We used to work out a lot together down at Marion Anderson.
That's the first person I ever went to camp.
So I'm trying to remember like some of the other guys that you mutual guys that you might know. You know Simon One Punch Car, any of those guys?
Yeah, that's my homie, you know, one of my homies.
Yeah. Me and Simon, we started working out together in 95.
Yeah.
Very good mine, Candyman, a lot of good guys down there. Rogers Mataguá when he first came to America. But I'm looking over your record now. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I ever had because I started working with Lightning's Unlimited about 3 years ago.
Can I keep you hold on for a minute? That's my mom. I want to tell her I'm on interview.
Sure.
Yeah, he's just been in with a lot of tough guys here.
Hey.
Yeah, come here.
Yeah, so the one thing, since I started working with Fight News Unlimited, I never had a chance to cover any of your fights. You know, over the last few years, you've been doing fights up in New York and Las Vegas, Nevada.
Like Florida. The last two fights are in Florida.
Yeah. And Rich isn't sending me down there to cover any fights.
Fort Lauderdale, that must have been fun.
Really hot.
Now, I'm just looking at some of these guys that you fought, you know, obviously very big names. Who would you say so far has been your toughest fight?
My toughest fight was Chris Herring. I think Chris Herring was my toughest fight.
Yeah. And what's been your greatest moment in the sport so far? What was that?
Me fighting Glenn Johnson.
Now, what was he like? I know that he's an old guy.
He was rough, man. Right. He was rough.
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience. I mean, 40.
I told you, Mike, so he was older.
Yeah. Well, you know what Evander Holyfield says, age is nothing but a number.
I like that.
Now, what's it like going into fight a guy like that? You obviously must have seen him fight before and had a lot of respect for him. Yeah, what was it like going into that fight?
I thought he was going to be old. I said, man, this dude old, he can't beat me. And when I got in there and was hitting me, he was like, that's all you got? I was like, oh, man.
That's rough. What's the most important thing you do to prepare for a fight?
Do a lot of running. A lot of cardio. A lot of running, cardio.
One question that I posed to Otis Griffin when we talked to him tonight. Obviously, the winner of this fight next week is eliminated for the shot at the IBF title currently held by Tavares Clown. A couple weeks ago, when Bernard Hopkins went up to Canada to fight Jean Pascal, which I thought Bernard was ripped off. I thought he won that fight clearly, despite the two knockdowns. After that happened and they were talking about a rematch that doesn't look like it's going to happen, Tavares Clown stepped up and said, well, if Jean Pascal doesn't want to fight Bernard Hopkins, I will. Well, how do you feel, like, if you win this fight next week and you're, given a shot at the title, would it bother you if you had to wait for Tavares Clown to fight Bernard Hopkins, or would you just rather fight the winner of that?
I was saying,
after that Bernard Hopkins fight a few weeks ago against John Pascal, and Pascal wasn't willing to give him a rematch, Tavares Cloud, who you have the potential to fight if you win this eliminator against Otis Griffin.
Yeah.
Would it bother you if Tavares Cloud decides to take a fight with Bernard Hopkins?
No, they take me a step to the side.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
No, they take me, step to the side.
how would you feel if Bernard beat Tavares and get an all Philly showdown with him?
I would love to fight Bernard. You know, hold it, keep it right in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, we're keeping it Philly and sell it out.
Yeah.
Now, what's it like being a Philly fighter? I know that, you know, from watching a few here and there live, I saw Hank Lundy down there in Boston, and he actually almost got in a fight after the fight with the other guy's trainer. And he said, I'm from Philly. I'll fight you right now.
This is rough. My sparring has been so good, man.
Yeah,
I'm working with Eddie Chambers and Steve Cunningham.
Oh yeah,
to get me ready. Yeah,
two of the best right there. I mean, Steve obviously 2-time world champion. Eddie, you know, went on to fight one of the Klitschko's. I mean, you look at it, and what's good about them is they're very versatile, they're a quick fighter. So that's good. If he's a bigger man, but he's a fast man, so you're not getting like a slow guy out there. And then Steve is a very versatile, you know, fighter. He does, you know, everything out there. That's what you said. You throw all the names out. It's like, man, these are just. I always felt privileged, you know, the fact that I got to train down with so many good guys. And you go through the gym wars, it's like you get into the fight, and it's like, this is the fight. The training was harder.
Some dudes just fight better than him.
Yeah, only that's the truth.
Yeah, some dudes fight better than him.
I'll tell you one of the tricks Jedi taught me, and I'm going back to 97 here. Because Jedi, I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, he is a big guy.
He got bigger.
Is he still training or?
No, he ain't been training.
Yeah, I haven't. I talked to him on Facebook recently, but I haven't. You know, I haven't seen him in about 3 or 4 years.
I last saw him, he's like 4 in a pound.
Really?
Yeah, he was dead. He said he back. I know one of his
last fights after he had that disqualification loss over in Germany, he weighed 293. That was in the fight, he was 293, which he was always a big, like, when I trained with him, he was getting ready for one fight. Obviously, he was so much bigger than me. He said, listen, he goes, I want to get in the gym. I want to work, you know, more on defense tonight. And he wasn't really, like, hitting me much, you know, back. But he was playing with me in there. And I was still pretty young. I was 20 years old. And he got me in, like, a headlock at one point. And he leaned me on the ropes. He goes, you know what I'm doing to you? I said, I don't know. He goes, I'm wearing your legs out. But he taught me so many good things that night. And it was a shame he had that you know, robbery over in Germany, because he was beating Valuev pretty clearly. I saw tapes of the fight, and I talked to him. Yeah, he was beating him up, and then I talked to Jimmy Arthur about a year after that. I saw Jimmy down at the fights, because Jimmy had come into my camp and, you know, taught me a few things, helped me out a lot. So I pulled Jimmy aside, because I knew Jimmy was a guy, he wasn't going to pull any punches, and he was going to tell you something honestly. I would tell you guys, if you were losing a fight, he would tell you, you lost that fight. But he said, we had him. We had him, and they had to get us out of there.
Uh-huh.
They found any reason they could. And that's, you know, I think that really just ruined Jedi's career, because I don't think he ever really did. He only had 2 fights after that, and like I said, looking on box records and stuff, he was around 290 pounds for those fights. Because the last time I saw him personally was back around 05 or 06 down the I think it was the old Spectrum that had fights.
Now, Yusuf, do you have a favorite fighter out there that you like to watch or emulate?
Sugar Ray Leonard.
Sugar Ray, really? That's a great choice.
Sugar Ray Leonard, who's another
Robert Chaley, yeah. I can remember, always remember, never forget that fight with Julio Cesar Chavez. I think it still holds the record as the latest stoppage ever in a fight.
Wow. Don't get me started on that.
I actually got the chance to interview Richard Steele, too. He's known as the referee for that fight, unfortunately.
Yeah.
unbelievable hand speed. So do you work on that a lot, your hand speed? Yusuf?
Yes, I'm here.
Look, you work on your hand speed a lot? Is that why you like those guys?
Yeah. Hand speed and my own. My eyes.
Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite puncher?
No, not really.
You like them all, right?
Yeah.
Coming up in this fight next week, you know, obviously it's a big fight. You've shown us a lot of versatility, especially in your fights on ESPN. I mean, you boxed tremendously against Chris Henry, but you've also shown, you know, the willingness to go out there and fight like a Philadelphia fighter and, you know, go slug for slug. You looking to be, you know, more of a boxer in this fight, or are you going to, you know, try to bring out his grip?
I thought I'd be a boxer and win, man. Like, I ain't fighting for the fans, no more. I'm just fighting for the W now. I go out there, you know, fight, box, do what I got to do and win, I'm happy.
What do you love most about boxing?
Do what I got to do and win.
What do you enjoy most about this sport, boxing?
I love the game, that's all. I love the fight, so, you know, I love the game.
You know, anything, you know, any prediction you want to give out to us next week or any shout-out you want to give to anybody?
I don't want to shout-out to Ogie, you know, wishing well, hoping, you know, luck, you know. Come next Friday, I'm going to go away with them.
All right.
Now, what do you think about your division? I mean, light heavyweight division is pretty stacked.
It's a good division. I think it's open right now. You got a couple guys out there, but, you know, hopefully once I get there, hopefully I can hold them down.
All right. And what's your ultimate goal in this sport?
I'm just be world champion. You know, like I promised my dad that before he died, that I was going to be world champion. Hopefully I can, you know, fulfill that promise.
All right. Well, you're gonna have a chance at the IBF title if you win this.
Yeah.
So definitely keep up the good work, and it was great talking to you tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
Okay.
All right, Yusuf. Well, thanks for being on tonight. If I see you at any fight cards in Philly, I'll come up and say hi.
Hey, you already hung up on us, man. You sounded like you wanted to get off the phone. He was giving quick answers.
Yeah.
Funny. Yusuf. No, not a man of many words, but I think he's a man of many punches. So it should be a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, I've had interviews where, you know, certain guys like, it was just hard. They don't want to say much. There was one guy we talked to, you know, was it come later, you know, everything was yes.
No, I told you about that because there was an interview I had with him back in the day. The second time we had him on, he was better because we had him on both second time. But the first time.
We both had him on. He still didn't say much. I mean, I barely didn't even know what to say to the guy.
Wasn't anything. He wasn't sure whether he was going to fight or do a movie next. So he was talking a lot about
Right.
But the first time, everything was yes and no. It was very, very rough. It was like one sentence at a time, and it was just tough. But, Yusuf was a little bit of a challenge to get him to start talking. He got a little good one at the end there, you know, promised his dad that he was going to win the world title.
One of the things I learned about journalism, I remember probably the second class I took on writing. You know, the first semester I took like newspaper writing. So you had to learn, you know, it was just facts. It's facts if you were writing a story for a newspaper article. And I did very well in that class. The second one was more writing editorials, like feature stories. So you had to find like something that would be of interest.
Right.
And it didn't have to be like seriously like newsworthy, like, hey, this
car accident happened or this murder happened and I'm going to report about it. It is more something like, hey, these are human interest stories, things that people want to read, things that people will enjoy reading. So our goal in that class was to do a story, and you had to do an interview. You had to, you know, interview the person. And I remember the teacher telling me, you want somebody that's going to give you good quotes and good sound bites and things that are going to be, you know, you got to get somebody with a personality out there.
Right.
And I remember one of my friends actually made his story in his interview. He's like, I'm going to interview, he was a big wrestling fan. He's like, I'm going to do an interview with Ric Flair. And the teacher's like, if you can get a hold of Ric Flair and get him to agree to do an interview with you, okay, that's fine. Sure, go right ahead. And he actually faked the entire thing. He was such a Ric Flair fan. He probably knew that Ric Flair than Ric Flair did.
Mm.
He was right. And this is before, you know, internet was around, but it wasn't as popular as it is right now. Like, you could go on, like, a site right now, and, like, Ric Flair, intimate stories about him bashing Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
But this guy actually conducted a fake interview with Ric Flair and got an A on this project. So, yeah, it was great. So it was other people like, okay, who are you going to interview? Well, I'm going to interview something, you know, about the Las Vegas University dining hall. Okay, well, who are you going to, you know, and then I'm going to conduct an interview with the head, like, custodian or somebody. And I'm like, okay, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I happened to step right into a gold mine because the year before, Dr. Cox had retired from being a professor. And always he would be telling us when he'd come to practice, he'd be like, you know, I'm busier now. I thought I'd retire. I'd be living, like, easy. I wouldn't be doing anything. I would just show up to practice. I'm actually busier. It's unbelievable. And I was like, well, and I went up to the professor. I'm like, listen, I said, would I be able to do a story on Dr. Cox? They're like, okay. And they're like, about what? I'm like, well, he's not teaching anymore, but he's saying he's busier now than he ever was. They're like, he's a great interview. He's always got great quotes. Go right ahead. And that's it. I did a story on how he's busier now. And he's like, yeah, back when I was, you know, a professor, I would get up in the morning. I would go to class. You know, I'd do a few classes. I'd go to my office. I'd grade some papers. It was great. Then I'd head over to practice. He's like, now I have no structure. What I want. I always got people calling me. I still got to come to the university for things. And then I got to go to practice. I'm busy. I don't know. It's crazy. Oh, my God. Haven't you? You don't even know.
Yeah,
you think there's
like
these stories, you know, you don't
have no
idea what it's all about.
It's funny in the newspaper writing, because one of the things that I got from my few years of writing for newspapers, I started in 2001, and I got out of the newspaper business in 2005. And when I used to write, I'd write everything from feature stories to football game stories. You know, when I started in town meeting stories and stuff. But whenever I had an interview to do, I always try to ask somebody, what do you love most about what you do? Because I noticed the first time I asked that, the person gave a really good answer. So it's one thing that, like, you always try to ask fighters, like I mentioned earlier, because every now and then you get somebody who goes on a tangent, like Otis did tonight, and just knocked my socks off. I mean, jeez, that was, like, one of literally the best answer we've ever gotten to that question. But it's just something about, you know, certain words just trip people out and make them say, yeah, you know, this is what I really think. When you ask somebody what do you love most about something, you know, it just goes to the core of, like, what they're all about. You know, what do you love most about what you do? And it's one of those tools that I've never forgotten, because it just always gets me good answers. And even though I didn't want to ask you about that, because I didn't want to ruin my streak with that question. But, man, you know, there's just certain things you just say. You know, some people, even if they don't want to talk, you know, you get to ask the right question and they'll open up. But it's, you know, it's just getting to the heart of trying to figure somebody out. It's just trying to let them talk, even if they don't want to talk. You know, even like when I had that problem with Kung Lee, I just kept asking questions. And actually, one of the funniest interviews I've ever had was with one of the Allman Brothers, Greg Allman. because I actually used to interview a lot of rock stars who were coming through the local venue when I worked for the New Hampshire paper up there back in 2004. And I get Greg Allman on the phone, and I don't know a thing about the Allman Brothers. Everything I learned was on a little internet search before this interview. You know, call me stupid, but I didn't grow up in that generation, really. I just know some of the music. So I made the mistake of asking him something about, like, how do you determine your sets? You know, every time you go out there, how do you decide what you're going to play for the concert, right? And he says, you know, me and Warren Haynes, we get together before, and I said, Warren? And I'm like, Warren who? And he's like, you don't know who's in the band? And he started flipping out on me after the interview. You could tell he was drinking, you know, and he said he was working on his house down there wherever he lives, and, you know, he didn't even really want to be interviewed. He's kind of a grumpy guy when he wants to be, but, you know, he was just, like, pissed all of a sudden because I didn't know every member of the band. Of course, I know who Warren Haynes is now. I figured it out. He's the guitarist, you know. He's one of the most famous members of the band. But anyway, after he finished, you know, screaming at me, and he's like, who's your editor, and, you know, what the hell is going on? I settled him down finally because I just kept asking questions. So by the end of it, he's like, all right, well, are you going to be at the show? And I go, yeah. Well, I'd like to meet you. He's like, yeah, right. I never did meet him. It was just kind of funny. That's the way it ended. But when you interview a lot of people, you just got to recognize that moment. If somebody sounds like they don't want to talk, you know, You actually did it before me tonight. That impressed me there, Tom. You're like, anybody want to give a shout out to?
Yes.
Awesome. Anyway, moving on, I would like to mention the story of the day in MMA, even though it was kind of the story of yesterday. Chuck Liddell has formally retired, believe it or not.
Congratulations.
Here's a little clip from ESPN. After the commercial here.
This News Now update is brought to you by Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2. Unleash the truth on your favorite game console now.
It took a lot of talking to my family and friends and coaches and decided to finally retire. It's been fighting a long time, and seemed like it was time to talk to the guys at the UFC, and, you know, they offered me a job, and, you know, something I needed something to do. I couldn't do enough of the training and fighting my whole life, but now got something else, and I had a way to go out and help keep promoting the sport I love, so I'm excited.
And with that, we welcome you into our studios here at ESPN. John Anna, Kenny Florian, and Chael Sonnen here on MMA Live. So you heard it there from Chuck Liddell. That entire interview comes your way Friday at midnight Eastern. That is 9 p.m. Pacific on ESPN2. But guys, Chuck Liddell, the UFC career, at least the fighting portion is over, and quite a legacy to new spot.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, what's so amazing about a guy like Chuck Liddell is he was really the sport's first superstar. The guy who is treated like a rock star, and it wasn't because, you know, he was a charismatic guy. Yeah, sure, he's got that. But really, it was his fights that did the talking for him. He only was a part of the biggest fights in UFC history, and he knocked a lot of those guys out.
Yeah, Chuck, you know, look, Chuck did awesome, and he's not done yet. He's got a lot more exposure he's going to get. He's got a lot more interviews, a lot more traveling, a lot more work. Chuck's best days are still ahead of him. We're going to miss him in the octagon. He truly has some memorable moments, but he has a lot more to offer, and I don't know that Chuck knows that yet. I think Chuck right now is in a state of, everything's done. I don't think he quite sees the doors that are going to open and things he's going to be able to do just by being Chuck Liddell.
There are only a few guys, maybe two guys, who can actually lay claim to being the face of mixed martial arts, and really for 10 years, Chuck Liddell, or some people are mispronouncing it, Liddell, who aren't big MMA fans. This was the guy synonymous with MMA, and an era certainly comes to an end here this week in the UFC. Well, if you want that entire Chuck Liddell interview, be sure you check out MMA Live. That is Friday, right as the clock strikes midnight on ESPN2, so we hope to see you then. Until then, for K-Pro and Chael Sonnen and John Anik, we'll see you later on MMA Live.
So there you go. It's official. It's official. Chuck Liddell is done. And that kind of took me by surprise, honestly, because one of my first articles for opposingviews.com was pretty much say that I think the Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz fight is going to happen. And so I kind of had a feeling maybe he would retire, but I figured there's got to be somewhere written in stone that they have to fight. So I would think that Dana White would never let him out of his contract. And but then, you know what happened is Chuck got freaking married. And every married guy out there knows what happens when you get married and you're ready to retire. You pretty much, you got to do it. You know, the wife's not going to let you fight. So I don't know if that's the real answer, but I bet it had a lot to do with it. But anyway, Chuck's out. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does next. But I think the way it sounds, like he already has something lined up. And I don't know about announcing, but I bet he would be able to develop a good announcing rapport. I don't know, play-by-play. He's not that quick a talker, but you never know what he could do. He could be doing something officially for the UFC, being a representative somehow, and getting into movies. I know he was on one of those episodes of that Blue Mountain State show, so you never know. He could go into TV. He says in the little snippet that they just played something about, I already got something that's going to be doing, that's going to be promoting MMA. So it sounds to me like the UFC said, all right, listen, put you on fight. So let's do this for him. Maybe he'll start working with the Ultimate Fighter or something. But he'll be around. You know, he literally is the face of the UFC, like they said, because I can remember back in like 2006 when I first started Fight These Unlimited, and I really wasn't into the MMA. I mean, I'd heard about it, and I think my very first show was the Strikeforce one on Showtime, because I had Showtime where I was living, so I watched it. But the only show to this day I ever ordered on pay-per-view was the UFC where Chuck Liddell fought Rampage Jackson. And I can remember the buzz around that fight, too. It was huge. And it was one of Chuck's, unfortunately, more brutal knockouts at the end of his career. And I think that has a lot to do with Dana White coming out and saying after that loss to Franklin where he got knocked out that he didn't want to see Chuck fight again. He wouldn't promote it if he did. So maybe it was a little bit of Dana White saying that and a little bit of Chuck Liddell not wanting to do it anymore. But he did have a lot of brutal knockouts at the end, but he still came to fight and he still made it entertaining. And just an unbelievable icon in the whole UFC. And he really put them on the map in so many ways. He got on the show Entourage. That was big news. He was just an amazing figure. You know, and some of his younger days are probably better than his latest days. But said some words in the cage, and it's understandable if they were hanging up. But one of the stories I actually did on opposingviews.com this week was about Brock Lesnar. They're trying to say Brock Lesnar is going back to the WWE. And it's funny because there's a guy, Dave Meltzer, the guy that came out with the initial report saying, well, Brock Lesnar hasn't been training, and you know, there's all these rumors, and the whole thing is, like, ridiculous, because I don't understand how people get duped so badly. It all starts from this Ariel Helwani interview. I don't know if you know who Ariel Helwani is, but he's like this, I guess, Hawaiian dude. I don't know. He does this report on MMA, and he does videos, and he gets a lot of interviews. He's a good MMA journalist, but he's at the side of the cage when Brock Lesnar gets beat by Cain Velasquez. And he's with The Undertaker.
And yeah.
Seen this video?
And
The Undertaker locks eyes with Brock Lesnar as he's coming out. And he says, you want to do it? And it doesn't look like Brock even says anything to him. He just kind of gives him a look and walks away. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all these blogs pop up the next day. The Undertaker wants to fight Brock at WrestleMania. Where do you get that? Did you get that from that clip? You want to do it?
I really don't. Because here's what happened, to be totally honest. Brock and The Undertaker, I mean, they obviously wrestled each other in his past, you know, when Brock was at the WWE. I could see them, I can see both ways. One, Undertaker has this legendary undefeated streak at WrestleMania, but these are all pre-gimmick matches. You know, so he's 18-0 in WrestleMania. It's all great and everything. He could be 0-18 if, you know, Vince McMahon said, I want you to lose these matches. So could they possibly make a Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar in a type of, you know, real confrontation with the Undertaker's legendary undefeated streak on the line? They could. But then if he loses, they're screwed. Now, could they say, okay, we're going to make Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, and we're going to have it be a, like, you know, a mixed martial arts type of, like, you know, contest, you know, that was a real fight.
Huge match.
But look at it this way. Could they make them have, like, would they consider a real competition, but only be art? Where they said, yeah, it's going to be real, but we're going to somehow pull it so the Undertaker wins. But that kills the legitimacy of it. So you get, it's a lose-lose situation. Well, actually, it's a win because it would draw a lot of money, because
right.
It would get MMA fans watching, it would obviously get wrestling fans watching, and it might get some casual observers watching. Say, well, you know, I wouldn't mind checking out on this.
Well,
but here's what you lose-lose. You lose-lose,
yeah.
And you say, okay, let's put it in there as legitimate, and Brock beats the Undertaker. Remember, he's younger, and he's more experienced in doing this.
But I mean,
so could Brock beat, yeah, very well could. Then Lloyd loses full mystique with The Undertaker as his undefeated at WrestleMania. So next year, now you have nothing to build on. Or you make it be a match where it's predetermined, then you rip the fans off and you lose that way, too.
Yeah, actually, there's an article that says Dana White says that he's not going anywhere. I haven't got to read it yet, but. If Dana White's coming out and saying it's not happening, it's probably not happening. The only way it could happen, actually, is Brock has one more fight, and then he does a contract renegotiation to stay in the UFC. So he takes maybe a hiatus, goes back and does that one wrestling match, but then he comes right back to MMA. Because if he does the whole, oh, I'm dropping MMA because I got beat in one fight, and I'm going back to wrestling... I mean, think about his image. As a superstar, you want that image? Everybody will be like, what a wimp. He's going back to the fake shit. It's funny, people don't, in the journalism and MMA world, you know, it's like they don't think about those things. And then the other thing is, Brock got his fucking face cut open. Bad. By Cain Velasquez. He actually got a 6-month suspension, medically. So he shouldn't even be training. And they're making a big deal out of the fact that he's not training. He's out hunting. Well, good. That's probably good for his cardio. He needs to be running up some mountains, chasing elk. He doesn't need to be in there trading punches with people after he just got his face cut open that bad. I actually posted a big picture of his damage. The one cut that was like right down the cheek. It looked like it was probably to the bone. And that shit just doesn't heal overnight, so... And it's just amazing to me how some people just don't think about those things. And they put this stuff out there, like, oh, you know, it's the implication that maybe he's leaving, and everybody's going to read it because they think it's true. But it's not the case, you know? You've got to at least set the record straight. And it's like, if the one thing about the whole journalism world online that bothers me now is just like, people will put headlines on things. And when it's an honest question that you're trying to answer... You know, put the question mark at the end of the headline. There's nothing wrong with that. And people go out and they put these headlines as fact. And in the article, you start to be like, yeah, saying maybe it's possible. But, you know, they just got you to read it based on the premise that it's supposed to be a fact. This is happening. Just about one thing that bugs me about it. You know, anybody can be a writer online. And people that just have good sites and they just post a bunch of stuff all the time. They go out there and say these things, and then, bam, it becomes reality. And the thing about the Undertaker interview, if you really listen to it, you really watch the Undertaker's reactions to the question, and to think that people automatically thought, well, this means that he wants to fight the Undertaker. There's so many different things that he could have been talking about. And he didn't even specify. Like, he didn't even get close to specifying what he meant by, do you want to do it? And when the interviewer said, you know, what do you mean? What was that all about? He says, I just think he needs to train harder. which makes me think, well, maybe he's got some kind of training juice, not necessarily steroids, but, you know, some kind of product that works for him that he told him about over the phone or something beforehand. I mean, whether they're enemies in the ring or whatever in the history, it doesn't matter. I mean, they're probably friends. They work with the same organization. All that shit's for show, so you never know. Maybe he meant, let's go train together. You know, maybe you should come train at my place. Who knows? Do you want to do it? It does not mean, do you want to wrestle? You know, it just doesn't automatically mean that. And for people to just jump to that conclusion and just invent that whole thing, whether it happens or not, it could happen, but I guarantee you it wasn't like a planned thing. There's no way they could have planned that. I mean, that was just idiot magic. Look at that unfolded. I think it's better for the WWE. It just adds that rumor mystique to the whole thing. But the whole idea that Brock is leaving the UFC, I think, is bullshit. You know, if he does take a hiatus, he takes a hiatus. But I think the whole story was invented, and I don't want to see anybody like invent the new story that Brock is leaving, because I just think that image thing is the most important thing. Nobody should just jump to conclusions about whether he's training or not. I mean, people take vacations. It's the holidays, for Christ's sake. Of course he's not training. You know, the blogosphere, they call it. So I try to write less. actually, I've been writing more about MMA on opposingviews.com. I did a story there, and I put the big picture of his cut. If you look, if you just do the search, Cain Velasquez versus Brock Lesnar, comma, cut on Google, and it hit images, you know what I'm talking about. It was bad. It was bad stuff. And the one article point that I made, I think that people miss, is that Brock Lesnar, I mean, he came out of wrestling nowhere, really, to MMA, and got all these opportunities because of his fame and popularity. He's getting paid a shitload of money every fight, you know, six figures, up to $400,000 or $500,000 they're going to pay him for every fight. And he has improved his game so much. I mean, if you watch the Cain Velasquez fight, he comes running out there and tries to land a flying knee. Like, who would ever thought this guy's that athletic with that kind of weight to be getting off the ground and doing that type of shit, you know? But beyond that is the boxing. And we talked about this with Kimbo a lot and with Pujanowski, you know, guys that are built for the show muscles. They don't have the best reach. They don't have the best jab. And their boxing typically sucks. So Brock Lesnar has some basic good boxing skill. He needs to take it to the next level, which is why we've seen him get beat in the last two fights in the first round. He just got smoked both fights, even though he won the Carwin fight. It turned out a good choke. He needs better boxing, that's all. And if he keeps up that striking stuff, the dynamics, jumping, doing those flying knees every now and then a little more accurately next time, he'll be good, you know. He's got a bright future in MMA. But to go back to wrestling, I think it's just an automatic step down. You know, even if the fans in WWE really love him that much, they want to see him, they want to pay to see him, Vince McMahon wants to pay him $2 million an appearance, I think he's more concerned about his image if he does that. It's like he can't go back. He's taken a step over the line, you know? And Dana White, you know how much money the guy is raking in with the UFC? You think he wants to see him walk away to the WWE and give them any spotlight off of what he's done with Brock? Dana White's probably going to go to him and say, listen, we're going to do whatever we have to do. We're going to pay you $1 million a fight. You're going to be the first fighter to be paid $1 million a fight if you stay with us. You know, who knows what's going on behind the scenes? But I would, you know, I give Dana White a lot of trash every now and then. I tell him on the air how much he sucks, even though I don't run DanaWhiteSucks.com. But this one thing, I think he's not going to fuck up. He's going to get this guy to sign on the dotted line. He's going to get an extension. I think all that shit, it's just unfortunate how it just gets blown up like that. I encourage people to watch that interview again and listen and watch Undertaker. His eyes, his voice, it's like, it's personal. He doesn't want to talk about the question. It's not anything to do with a wrestling match, I don't think. Whether it's necessarily about steroids, you know, whether you want to do steroids, and why you would ask that on camera, I don't know. Why would you cover up the question? That's a good question. But what was that all about? What's this doing? If it's because of the wrestling, maybe you'd say, well, because Brock's under contract with the UFC, and Undertaker didn't want to make any waves, but he wanted to do something. But I think that's bullshit, you know? How does he know he's going to be on with Ariel Helwani when Brock comes out of the ring? You know, what did he make a deal with Helwani beforehand? You know, the WDW is involved. I mean, that's just conspiracy type shit that's just invented out of thin air. But everybody believes it. It's out there everywhere. I don't know. I just don't think it ever was about that. I think it was just something to do with training, something to do with the chemical, possibly. Not saying that's a fact, but that's what I think. I think it was, like, we need to train together. We need to do what we used to do when you were in the WWE. Who knows? But those guys do a lot of junk. So, you know, they're not all that big for nothing. And you Google the Ultimate Warrior sometimes. That's the last time I watched wrestling, was when he was popular.
I just got handed a note here. Because, I mean, I guess it's me being the big radio superstar that I am, that I get notes while I'm on the air.
It's a new one.
Could not forget to make this, tribute / sad announcement. A legend in Philadelphia boxing was lost yesterday. Not 2 days ago, I'm sorry. The 28th. Bad Benny Briscoe, one of the toughest fighters in history. Guy that Ring Magazine ranked in their top 100 greatest punchers of all time. 67 years old. He was never a world champion, but he did fight for a title on several occasions. Back in the day, they said when titles meant something.
When did he fight?
He fought in the 60s and 70s. You know, he fought to a draw with the great Carlos Monzon in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
You know, I guess it's not really related, but do you think he's the inspiration for the character Lenny Briscoe from Law and Order?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't watch the show, so I couldn't tell you. But Lenny Briscoe was a hell of a tough guy. I mean, he was so respected in Philadelphia that they created an award under his name every year, the Fighter of the Year in Philadelphia gets the Benny Briscoe Award. And I know my friend Roger Matagua has received that. It's a shame. I mean, he was only 67 years old, but I was reading Russell Peltz's tribute to him, because Russell was his promoter for several years. You know, he said, you know, he never won a world title, but he was fighting, you know, the greats of the day, Carlos Monzon, Valdez. And he was fighting, you know, a lot of really, you know, tough characters that were all-time great. He just couldn't get over that, you know, hump and, you know, get his, his title. But he was, you know, undeniably respected. He was feared. You know, a lot of guys didn't want to tangle with him. So it is a definite loss to the boxing world, and especially to Philadelphia boxing. He had been in declining health the last few years, which I did not know, and he had for the last few weeks had been under hospice care, you know, passing away 5:52 on a Tuesday night. But may you rest in peace.
I wish I had the 10 count bell. I'd do it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get that, like a recording of it or something.
Yeah. Benny Briscoe, I wish I knew you.
Hold on for me for 1 second.
Yeah.
Let me see what I can do for you, okay?
You know, we're trying to get Vito Antiformo. You know that guy?
Of course.
Dennis is trying to hook me up with an interview with him.
I would love that.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I think he was working the last week we tried to get him, so maybe Thursday night's a bad night for him, but he's available. We're still getting Glenn Johnson, too. I mean, we just talked about tonight. Actually, one of the best parts of the interview with Yusuf was talking about, I thought he was an old guy, man. Underestimated him for his age, so there you go. But, man, that was kind of funny. You know, that's all I wanted to talk about. I thought he was old. He is, though. He's still a fight. Jeez. Ranked 8 in the world. I'm super middleweight. But Yusuf and Otis, they're ranked 6 and 8 respectively there at light heavyweight. And Otis is ranked a little higher, actually, because he has more fights.
Hey, Rich, if I could interject for just one second, I'm going to turn my computer off. I'm going to put my phone to the computer here.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned it, and I was able to pull this up off of one of my videos. This was from the Blue Horizon card 10 days after September 11th, but I would like to at least play about 30 seconds of it for Benny Briscoe. I'm going to put my phone up to my computer, and I'm going to play this the tolling of the bell 10 times in respect. So just give it a few moments of silence, and we'll be back to you in just a minute. Thank you very much. You could hear that, right?
Yeah, we heard it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, so I think we just about covered everything. We had two guests on. We got a lot of boxing, a lot of MMA talking. And next week, we're going to be right back at it. Try to get some good guests. Maybe one boxer, one MMA guy next time. Split it up a little bit.
Okay. Hey, I'll talk to anybody.
Right? Lou Duva. There's some good Lou Duva stories tonight.
All right. Well, until next year.
Next year. That's right. New year.
Yeah. You know what? Not next week, but 2 weeks is going to commemorate my third anniversary doing the show. Yes, to miss the show.
Right.
Iron Man streak stays alive.
You know, we got warned the last time. Thanksgiving.
We got warned.
We did. From Blog Talk Radio. So don't miss any shows. So
right.
Next time we take a licensed holiday from our show, we have to play a repeat. I learned that lesson.
What license holiday did we take?
You can have like 5 misses, and then they take away your show. It's like, whoa, easy.
Well, what holiday? What did we miss?
We missed Thanksgiving. Obviously. Yeah.
That's bullshit. I mean, it's Thanksgiving.
We have two misses on our
recordings. Play one of our recordings on the show.
Yeah, we'll do that next time. Until next week.
Until next year, I'm out of here, man.
All right. Happy New Year.
You too. Wait.
Merry late Christmas. Out of here.